best you can ask for in a day two tackle. And that's like, you're not going to get a guy that's super polished and has the requisite traits that you want in a tackle. That guy's going in the first round, right? Welcome into the Hot Read Podcast for Monday, April the 22nd. I'm your host, Easton Freeze, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network. You can follow me on social media at Easton Freeze. I'm joined, as always, by producer JT, who you can follow on social media at JT underscore Runke. And baby, it is draft week. Woo! We're here. We did it. How we feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. We're here on a Sunday. We're officially here at draft week. The Preds are in the playoffs. Playoff hockey is back. The weather is surprisingly like a little cooler, which I'm a big fan of. Like, I'm not sweating my balls off anymore after this past week. Like, vibes are high right now. So
I love it.
I'm doing good.
Yeah, man, we've got a big week ahead of us, and I'm always fearful when we get to draft week that I'll just be burnt out and I'll be spent. I'm not there yet. I'm tired. And what the hard work we've done in the past 72 hours, I've been very tired of. I am at this point very tired of doing, but it's been for a good cause. It's been hard work on the topic of today's episode, which is the 2024 Titans Do and Do Not Draft Guide. We are going through JT and I's magnum opus of our draft season, the culmination of our work since January, putting together a bespoke Tennessee Titans guide of over 70 prospects at every position of need. Actually, in every position, regardless of need, from round 1 through 7 for the Titans to be targeting and for you all to dig through, to read up on before the draft, guys they should and should not draft for different reasons. Some of them just that they're over or underrated as prospects or have certain red flags or green flags that we really like. And some guys that we think are really good prospects would be a particularly bad fit for the Tennessee Titans for one reason or another. That's what this article is about. And JT, it's going to end up being, I'm still finishing up the last touches of it, but it's going to be over 10,000 words long. So we put our heart and soul into this thing. And I know some writers love to be like, well, I wrote an article today. It's 23,000 words long. And I know to a lot of readers, that's not the turn on that the writers think it is. I see that kind of thing. And I'm like, I'm not sure I want to read your, novel. Don't be alarmed by that number. It's 10,000 words spread over 70 prospects. So like, you don't have to read the whole thing. You go through and you read a paragraph or two on guys that you find interesting. It is in bite-sized pieces. It's very consumable in that way. It is not a big, heavy, lengthy novel filled with super fat paragraphs in that way. So we're going to be going through like less than half of the article today, just touching on our highlights in each round. And JT and I both, we split up the work here. Most of what we have written, we agree upon. Some of it we don't. So we'll get into that once we get there today. But before we dive into the round by round breakdown for the Tennessee Titans ahead of, again, Thursday's first round of the NFL draft, we're less than 5 days away now. We need you to do us a couple of favors. First of all, if you're watching with us live on a Sunday afternoon, thank you for being here. We appreciate you tuning in. If you're not watching on the YouTube platform, we recommend that you do. So leave Twitter, leave Facebook, head on over to Broadway Sports Media's YouTube page. That's Broadway Sports Media on YouTube. Find this live stream. And then in the comment section, you can join William, who's already with us, in joining the conversation. We'd love to hear your thoughts today as we embark upon draft week. While you're there, make sure you have hit subscribe to Broadway Sports Media's Broadway Sports Media's YouTube page and hit like on the video while you're at it, because those things are very easy for you to do and very helpful to us and for the algorithm and all those things. So hit like, hit subscribe, and then join the conversation in the comments there. Make sure you're following us on social media at Hot Read Pod, all of those things. Subscribe to where you get your podcasts, all of that good stuff. We appreciate it. And if you would be a friend today by telling a friend, send this link to a buddy, hit like, hit retweet, whatever you can do to help us share the show, get as many live eyeballs on today's show as possible. That would be helpful. JT, I guess there's no place better to start than in round one. We'll start with where the Titans will find themselves on Thursday night. And we don't want to spend too much time on round one because we already kind of beaten it to death. It's the most talked about round. What the Titans' options are pretty clear. It's likely going to be a tackle or a receiver, barring some particularly significant trade situation where they're moving way back. So let's touch on just a couple of the guys that maybe we haven't talked a ton about that are first round potential prospects for the Titans. Let's start with this. And there are three instances in this article where the write-up was not the do draft or don't draft heading was not an actual player, but instead a draft maneuver, a strategy the Titans could take. And one of them is round one. I wrote, don't draft defense. Now, this is subject to change depending on if and how the Titans trade back. Again, if they, you know, if they traded with the Vikings somehow, the Vikings come up to 7 for the quarterback that they want that has fallen somehow in the first 7 picks, and the Titans end up getting 11 and 23, suddenly they've got 2 first round picks and one is in the, or they find themselves moving back with, I don't know, the Bengals or somebody. Like, that's a bad example, but you move back to 18 or 19 or 21, something.
The biggest one would probably be maybe that is realistic, is like maybe a Bills who want to send everything to come up to 7 and you find yourself at 28. Like,
that'd be the most dramatic.
Yeah.
100%. So if they found themselves in that situation, then the math may very well change. But assuming they stay at 7 or move back into like the quarterback row of Raiders,
Broncos, Vikings.
Thank Saints. You. Those guys at like 11, 12, 13, 14. They are likely to, and I think should be making an offensive selection. Now, that's not to say the Titans roster is not in just as much, if not more, need of defensive help in terms of both starters and in terms of depth. But the ultimate goal in 2024, as we've talked about ad nauseum on this show, is finding out if Will Levis is your franchise guy and setting him up for the best development and success that he can possibly have. And that's best accomplished by protecting him and giving him additional weapons, getting tackles, getting wide receivers. And those are two categories that you can very easily address in the first round of the draft. And then the two-part reason beyond that they should be doing this is entirely revolving around the idea of drafting for value and not for need. Now, if you go non-tackle, non-receiver in the first round as the Tennessee Titans, you're kind of handcuffing yourself in round two at 38, or if you trade back later in round two, round three, you're handcuffing yourself to having to, in particular, getting a tackle, right? They can't not come out of this draft with a starting tackle. And, you know, you set yourself up to have to reach on a guy in draft for need. Like, that's a recipe for disaster there. Whereas in the first round, you can kill two birds with one stone if you go tackle, right? Because of these top six tackles, there's really nowhere in the first round they could find themselves, I think, and select one of those top tackles, and you would say, well, that was a reach, because these guys are all going to be top 5 through 20 picks. And so staying in the first is really the best bet, in taking one of those top 3 receivers or taking one of the top 6 tackles. I think that they should do, and I think that they will do.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Not to say that this defensive class is worse than the offensive class. It's just,
I mean, it is, though. I think it is.
Kind of is.
Yeah.
But I think
there's some very good players, but
you're seeing more of the need for offense more than the talent, I think. Of course, I would take maybe a Dallas Turner or any of these top corners over a JJ McCarthy with a bullet 10 out of 10 times. But because of the need for these offensive linemen and receivers and quarterbacks this year, there's going to be a lot of depth in the defensive class that just gets pushed down to the point where it really doesn't make sense for the Titans to really shoot over their heads and take one of these defensive prospects in the first round.
So the Titans shouldn't take defense in the first round. I also wrote that they should not draft, don't draft Brock Bowers, tight end out of Georgia. And we've talked about this a ton, so I'll give the basic points on it. It's much more of a value discussion than a talent one, right? And I remember we were talking about this all the way back to when we were still in the regular season, because we were at Boomba's doing live shows there. I have no negative things to say about Brock Bowers as a prospect, but the window for a first round tight end pick to age well is much narrower than it would be for a receiver or a tackle, for example. Like it or not, that's just the way that it is. And if Bowers is taken in the top half of the first round, he's going to come into the NFL as one of the highest paid players at the tight end position already. So he'll need to realize close to his ceiling in terms of potential on his rookie contract to be worth that pick. And historically, you know, the first round tight ends we've seen go off the board in recent years, they just don't live up to that. And they end up being seen as ultimately failures in terms of draft process, if not failures on the field. Like, I wouldn't call up Kyle Pitts a failure of a player. He's a starting NFL tight end, but was he worthy of that? Where'd he go? A fourth, fifth overall?
I believe.
Fifth. Five, yeah, no, four, five, yeah. Absolutely not a top 5 pick in the draft in hindsight. And so I just think building your team on exceptions to the rule which I think I really do think Brock Bowers is going to be. I think that he is an exception to this rule, but I also am not letting that cloud my judgment. Historically, it's a bad idea. And when you're building your team on exceptions and going with non-premium players in the first round, it's a dangerous process. And it would be a luxury selection for the Titans that I don't think that they can afford right now. So that's Brock Bowers. Let's talk about some guys they should draft, JT. And let's stay with the skill position guys. You wrote about Roma Dunze, who you wrote the Titans should draft. They should draft Roma Dunze. I agree with that. Maybe talk to why that is, and then we can get into a broader discussion about, yeah, we love this prospect, but do we see a reality in which he ends up being a Tennessee Titan?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing, right? As much as you would love to have Roma Dunze, I think it would, either way they go, it shows their hand, right? This is a team that, in this article, I once again argued that I think is still more likely than not another year away from truly competing in the AFC South again. I think 2025 is still the best spot for them to
truly, that's the target. Yeah.
To truly succeed in the division. And with that, you know, taking a Roma Dunze is kind of showing a little bit of what they're planning towards still. And past this year, I think if you draft a Roma Dunze, you're saying that this is going to be the heir apparent to your DeAndre Hopkins guy, because that's really what he is, right? He's a big X. You throw him the ball, you're gonna hyper target him because you have the confidence that he's gonna come down with that ball, and you should have the confidence in him. 4.45 speed at his size, 75% contested catch rate this last year was the best in the entire NCAA for wide receivers, according to PFF. And I mean, he was a big reason why Michael Penix had a resurgent year and why they made it to the championship game against Michigan. So, you know, is it the smart choice? I think in another article where I was more talking about Malik Nabers, taking a wide receiver here is probably the bigger gamble because you still have a glaring hole on the left side of the line. Mm-hmm. But it's clear that if you take Roma Dunze, your wide receiver room is going to be really, really good for a long time.
I agree. And so that brings up the bigger question of, as much as I love Roma Dunze, he's a top three favorite player of mine in this draft. I think he's going to be a very good, I don't see a world in which he's not a very good NFL player. I'm not sure I see a world in which he's the pick for the Titans because of the way they've talked about Malik Nabers. Because of the, I think fit wise, we agree Malik Nabers is probably a better fit for the Titans right now than Roma Dunze. And with their primary need being tackle, I can talk myself into seeing them taking Malik Nabers at 7 over a tackle prospect. I could see them taking a tackle over Malik Nabers at 7 or moving back and taking a tackle at 13, 14, 15, whatever. Can you see a world in which they take an Ndunze that wouldn't be a surprise to you?
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be that Joe Alt and Malik Nabers are off the board, I think, right?
I think so,
that's
too.
That's the only real outcome, I think, because of what, like you said, the tea leaves, if you read through them, that Malik Nabers is the guy that they have higher on their board over Roma Dunze. And of course, once you start seeing Joe Alt and Malik Nabers off the board, that's when you start to get to a consensus right now where it is, okay, now things are kind of equal. Do we take the big X receiver, or do we take not the best tackle in the class, consensus wise? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you can go back to what Brian Callahan said all those months ago, which was like two at the NFL Combine, where he says that he likes the guys who score touchdowns more than the tackle prospect. And that's where I could see a world where Roma Dunze ends up in two-tone blue.
I completely agree. I think that is the breakdown. And so ultimately, not likely to be a Titan, but I am going to be a fan of his wherever he goes. And it's going to break my heart if, like, the Colts move up, as they've been rumored to potentially want to do, and land Roma Dunze. Like, in terms of watching the Titans and being annoyed, last year, like, my guy was Anthony Richardson. Loved him. And then, of course, he goes to the Colts, right? They tend to draft my guys too, like the BYU tackle last year. I was a big fan of,
and then Blake Freeland.
Yeah, Blake Freeland, and then he played.
They ended up with the
South Carolina corner.
South Carolina corner, and then the other guy who fell, who was a first round prospect. Remember that?
Oh, out of Northwestern.
I forget what his name is, but it was really fun. Adetomiwa Adebowore.
Adetomiwa Adebowore. Yeah. If they end up with Roma Dunze, Or if they end up with a Quinyon Mitchell in the first round, it's going to annoy me, because those are like two of my top three.
Brock Bowers love would just be annoying objectively.
It would be annoying from a different reason, but in terms of me loving a guy and wanting to root for a guy, those are the two that would really piss me off. And so I'm kind of expecting it to happen, to be honest. Okay, let's move on to two more tackles in this first round, and then we'll move on to the meat of today's conversation. Round two, round three, round four. Some guys we've not talked a ton about on this show that we want to get to for you guys. And again, we'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on these guys as we go in the comment section over on Broadway Sports Media's YouTube page. Like, subscribe, follow, all those things. Let's start with Olufashinu, who has been the second, the third wheel really on this show, because we've talked a lot about Joe Alt. We've given a lot of airtime to a J.C. Latham. We've not talked a ton about Olufashinu, despite us both liking him as the second tackle in this class. You wrote up him in this article. You wrote why the Titans do draft Olufashinu. Talk me through him.
So we just talked about Roma Dunze, and I said all things equal, and made sure to say consensus wise, because The consensus on him is that these things are equal, Roma Dunze versus the second tackle prospect in this draft. That's not what I think. I think that Olufashinu and Joe Alt between one and two is so razor thin at the next level that once we get past this draft, I think that you're going to see both of these guys have really successful careers. Now, I think we've heard less of who truly is the tackle one on their board. I think that's something that has been truly harder to figure out. Obviously, Joe Alt is the most fun name to just continue to pass around. However, Olufashinu, I still think, has some of the highest potential and highest ceiling of this class. You talk about a guy who this last year has yet to allow a sack in any game that he has played as at Penn State. 16 hurries last year, or in his entire career in 21 games, makes him just one of the most athletic and fluid movers on the field. I personally think he's also the better pass protector to a Joe Alt.
Oh, he is. I don't think it's a question.
Joe Alt is the better run defender, especially with how this team wants to play next season. I think you would most likely look at these two guys and want the pass protection skills of an Olufashinu, paired with just the rave reviews of him as a character, in his leadership ability. I've heard quotes saying that when Olu has something to say, people tend to listen, is something that I think the Titans line, much like I said last year with a Paris Johnson Jr., could really use in the absence of Taylor Lewan. I mean, that's the last time you truly had a leader on this offensive line. And with all those things, I think Olu is still just such a well-rounded prospect that even if Joe Alt were gone, or even if Joe Alt was there at seven and the Titans end up going with Olu over him, I think that while people would be disappointed on name value alone, the Titans are still really getting a damn good left tackle who is going to be a plus starter for years to come.
Yeah, I think anybody that was disappointed by that should do some more homework, because I think Olufashinu would be, if he wasn't perceived as a potential liability in the run game, at least at the beginning of his career, I think we'd have a different conversation on this guy, because he truly, I think he is the most polished pass protector of the group. Let me talk about one more tackle before we move on to round two, and that's Talisa Fuaga, so ultimately I wrote, don't draft Talisa Fuaga, and here's why. I know a lot of very smart people have him as tackle three, some tackle two in this class, and he is one of the few guys in this class that I think has a don't bust, but that's a weird way of putting it, don't bust potential. I think he's one of the few guys that I'd be really surprised if he ended up being a bust, is the way I should put it. I love the guy. Like, I think he'd be offensive tackle one or two in most classes. He's super fun to watch play ball. As we've said a couple of times on this show, as our buddy Stoney Keeley has said, he's like, it's a don't let Fuaga find you out there. He's like an 80s horror film monster that's chasing you down, and if he finds you, he will kill you. He's the Terminator out there. He's the Grim Reaper in the run game. But that's the rub, right? While he's the most talented run defender, a run blocker in this class, he leaves something to be desired as a pass protector. That's the skinny of it. And I don't necessarily believe he's going to have a similar fate to these guys, but I heard somebody, I think it was Austin Gale on The Ringer the other day talking about this. I could be, maybe it was Ben Solak, one of The Ringer podcasts with some guys that I respect, talking about who are the two highest profile tackles in recent years who have come into the draft with a similar description of like absolute dominator in the run game. They need to like brush up on their pass protecting skills to the next level. It's Mekhi Becton and Ikem Ekwonu, who've not had great starts to their NFL career. Now, that's not to say those guys won't ever pan out, and that's not to say that they're total busts necessarily, but it's concerning when you'd rather, at least for me, I'd much rather have a guy like Olufashinu, who pass protection is down. He's a natural guy in pass reps. We'll have to teach him a little bit in the run game. I'm confident we can do that as a team. I'm not confident we're going to be able to get a guy to become a natural pass protector in that way. So with the Titans headed in this new modern, you know, direction offensively, I don't see him as an ideal fit to protect Will Levis early and often, which the Titans need their first round tackle to do. So I can't wait to watch him collect bodies at the next level, but I don't think it should be in two-tone blue. So that's why I don't think Talisa Fuaga is a great fit for the Titans. And Kenneth chiming in here saying he disagrees completely on Odunze, even if I still think they take tackle. So what do you understand? What's he disagreeing on? That the Titans don't take him? That he's what's the disagreement here? I'm confused. Do you get it?
I'm confused too. But I thought we should bring it up so that he can clarify and that we can elaborate have a discussion more on this.
Circle back
as well. But because I was like, I think I'm with you, but at the same time, I don't know. But
okay, so let's move to round two and let's do a couple of guys under the skill positions heading in the article here. Can I talk real quick about a little pretty Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, who I think is not good. I think he's one of the more underrated prospects in this process from a narrative standpoint. I think he should be getting more talk than he does. I think the reason he doesn't is because he's not a home run hitter. Like he's not a big play touchdown scorer in that way where the highlights are him running 80 yards to the house. But he does so many things really, really well, man. He's got great focus and tracking skills, strong route runner, fantastic ball skills. He can become a contortionist midair to bring in a catch. And everybody remembers that play that went viral of his from this past season where he somehow Houdini'd the ball between the two tacklers, one hand crossbody, one of the more impressive catches I've ever seen. He's decent size, 6'1", 189. He's got inside and outside versatility. I've seen a number of folks say that he's a slot only guy. I don't agree with that at all. He's got returner experience to boot. So that's a plus in the modern NFL. I think at the next level, he's got like a QB's favorite target kind of guy written all over him. Like the kind of guy that can come in and immediately just be right where the quarterback wants him at all times and has a connection earlier with a quarterback as a rookie than most do. And I think he'd be a pretty ideal complement to the Hopkins-Ridley duo in Tennessee. So I would not be upset at all if they took a Ricky Pearsall in round two.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. When you're looking at a wide receiver in this draft class, I don't think it really can be a developmental guy, especially in that first round guy. Maybe if it is a guy in the second round, they probably want him to be more refined and be able to produce earlier than not. And so a guy that I think is not a guy who can do that at the next level here, and who I think I wrote in this article should not be drafted by the Tennessee Titans, is Troy Franklin out of Oregon. I have a lot of things I just really don't like about Troy Franklin.
Agreed.
Specifically, my comp to him, which I still believe is the wacky wavy inflatable tube man. This guy's hands are a huge liability. In the tape that you watch, it's easy to see him constantly maybe fight himself a little bit. The catch point is more of in his chest than using his hands. Can really see that in his 10% drop rate in 2023, despite being a bigger receiver at 6'1 and having that speed at 4'4, 140, only recorded a 36.8% contested catch rate. For someone who was Bo Nix's number one receiver, I think the route tree is also severely limited and needs development at the next level. And for those reasons, I just think that when you look at a Troy Franklin, I don't know if he's going to be able to produce in that wide receiver role as much as, you know, some of these other guys right away. And that's why I think that he would be a poor fit in Tennessee.
I agree completely. We talked to our buddy Austin Gill from The Ringer when he came on for a wide receiver episode, and the foundation of his argument for Franklin was that he's kind of the last stop on the true X wide receiver one outside receiver train in this class. And I get that. I do. I just don't. I think that train station is falling apart at the seams. I think it's a dangerous part of town. I wouldn't want to stay at that train station for long, is the way that I feel about a Troy Franklin. So I don't think that he'd be a good fit for the Titans at all. Let's do some linemen here. JT, you wrote about when we talked about this guy on the show, but we wanted to show him some love from the article here. Kingsley Suamataia out of BYU, tackle, nicknamed the Dancing Bear in college. You wrote why the Titans should draft Kingsley Suamataia.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I have to, he's the Dancing Bear. That's his nickname, like, because of how nimble he is on his feet at his size. 326 pounds and still playing like he's on his tippy toes sometimes is something that's so much fun to watch. He's a more raw prospect, right? And that's where I think you get into that dangerous area of, if you don't take an offensive tackle in the first round, in round two, these guys are going to be more raw, but you have to be correct about your guy. And Kingsley's one of those guys I really do think that could pan out and be a hit at the next level and a fit with the Titans. We've also talked about how, you know, when you look at some of these guys like a JC Latham in the first round, you have confidence that even though he didn't play the other side of the line or vice versa, the left side of the line, he can at the next level or vice versa, the left side of the line, play the right side of the line. Kingsley is one of those guys who has already done it in college. In 2022, he played 644 snaps at left tackle this past year, and then 687 snaps at right tackle in 2022. So this is a guy who has the versatility to play on both sides of the line. He gave up 2 sacks, 5 quarterback hits, and 6 hurries this past season. He still has to work on some of, you know, his pad level, and some of the handwork still needs to be addressed. But I think this is a guy that Bill Callahan could take one look at and see that kind of footwork at that size and really fall in love with.
I agree. And I, along the same lines, I wrote for second round lineman about Patrick Paul in a very similar vein, tackle out of Houston, who we first were turned on to at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. I think he very well could be a starting tackle that somebody finds on day two. On the consensus draft board, he's fallen to like 66. I think he's going to be a borderline first round pick. I think he'll certainly be gone in round two. I'll be surprised if he falls as far as folks think that he does. He was built in a lab to play tackle, man. 6'7", 331 pounds. That frame comes equipped with the elite 97th percentile arm length. He's got all of the things on paper you're looking for in a tackle play. He's precisely the kind of prospect that I think a coach like Bill Callahan would get the most out of, because he has the requisite size and length and power and athleticism to be a great tackle. He's just, where he gets knocked is his technique and his recovery skills, because his rhythm can get thrown off, hand usage and footwork breakdown. It's going to take the right coach to clean up those elements of his game, but he does possess all the raw ability needed to fix his issues. And in general, and this is a big part of the reason why I think the Titans not taking a tackle until the second round is a risky idea. You know, folks talking about how this tackle class is deep. Yes, it is, compared to pretty much any other draft class you can remember. But that doesn't mean, like, I think when folks think it's deep, that means, you know, all of the top 10 tackles are starters, and their minds are thinking, okay, you get like 5 go in the first round, 5 go in the second round, like most drafts. Well, no, it's super deep. And so you're going to see, like, they're better, they're going to go earlier. So you're going to see like 7, 8, 9 of these tackles gone in the first round. And so you may be getting the same caliber of tackle in the second round you would in other second round picks or other second rounds of drafts. But instead of getting tackle 6 in 2022, you're getting tackle 10 in 2024, because so many of these guys have gone off the board. And so generally speaking, I think a big body like Paul, like Suamataia, that checks every fundamental box but needs some technical work is the best you can ask for in a day two tackle. And that's, like, you're not going to get a guy that's super polished and has the requisite traits that you want in a tackle. That guy's going in the first round, right?
I mean, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, you just count on a couple hands. Like, the guys that you think are, especially just for offensive linemen, right, in this first round, you know, the top 6 in a Joe Alt, Olu, Fuaga, Fatanu, Latham, Mims are all going to go in the first round. I feel pretty confident about that. And then you start to have questions about, does a Tyler Guyton find his way in there? And then you talk about, okay, if they don't go with that tackle right there, I mean, I think Jackson Powers Johnson and Graham Barton are pretty confident locks to be in that conversation at the back half. So, like, they're going to start going heavy and fast.
Zach Frazier getting a lot of talk in the first round.
Zach Frazier as well could be an interesting.
Jordan Morgan could sneak in there. A Patrick Paul could sneak in there. A Kingsley Suamataia could sneak in there. And, like, yeah, you could have 10, 11, 12 total linemen go in the first round. And suddenly this really deep class, which is really deep, all the depth is gone. They're all gone in the first round because they're really deep and they're really good. So Yeah. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball here, JT. We didn't write any defense in the first round because, again, no defense in the first round. That's the general idea. No defense. Like, subscribe, follow. Make sure you're with us on the Hot Read Podcast YouTube account. If you're not right now and hit subscribe, we'd appreciate retweets,
Kenneth
likes. All the
did come back in here on his Roma Dunze and clarify.
This is a good idea. Saying, yeah, let's progress this real quick.
Saying he's still a strong possibility for the Titans if they decide to go receiver in round one. I'm with Stoney. I think Neighbors is wide receiver three in that top three group.
You're actually with me, Kenneth, because I that's what I think. I think Neighbors is three. Is I was Roma your two
here.
Or your,
we're all here. We're all here.
I was about to say, weren't we all? Yeah, we were all on Roma Dunze wide receiver two. That's what my board looks like. That's what JT's board looks like.
It's Spider-Man pointing like. Meme. We all have Roma Dunze everywhere.
Yeah. That's not. There's a difference between my board and what I think the Titans see. And I would venture a guess, like, I know Stoney pretty well. I bet if I went and asked him right now, what do you think the Titans see it as? I think he'd agree with me that they probably like Neighbors more than they like Odunze. Now, we could be wrong. Like, you know, that's just reading the tea leaves. They could be bluffing. They could be lying. They could have changed their mind. But in terms of fit, it seems like Neighbors is a better fit. And in terms of what the Titans new coaching staff tends to like prefer, that leans Neighbors for me. And so that's why we think that. So I'm not saying he's not a possibility for them in the first round. I think it's significantly less likely they come away with an Odunze than they do a Neighbors or a Joe Alt or a trade back situation. That's just my two cents on that. Okay.
One more comment here.
Yeah.
Real quick while we're doing these. Joshua comes in with here saying, should draft Roman Wilson in the second, should draft Brennan Rice in the fourth. This is a comment that we weren't to talk about one of these two players. I'm just going to throw him in here.
Okay.
So in this article, unfortunately for you, Joshua,
we respect your opinion, Joshua.
I do respect your opinion.
We just think you're dumb and wrong about this. That's all.
That maybe is what Easton thinks. Of course,
hey,
Joshua, I think you were.
Hey, I have Roman Wilson in my top 10 receivers and you don't. Okay. I just don't think he's a good fit for the Titans, but you can explain that.
I don't think he's a good fit either. If I told you that, I think, Why take a Roman Wilson when Ricky Pearsall is going to be there? I think great example and a reason for why I think Roman Wilson is a bad fit. I think also, as I wrote in my article, I think durability at the next level is going to be a huge concern. Roman Wilson's coming into the league at a smaller height and weight than a Kyle Phillips, which I think is a huge red flag for me. And despite there not being a super long laundry list of injuries,
between Kyle Phillips and Tank Dell, which is not a great place to be. Generally,
it's not a great place to be if you're placing bets and you're wanting, you know, to
durable guy. Yeah,
exactly. If you want to reap the rewards of that, but still, I think that he is very much confined to the slot at the next level, whereas a Ricky Pearsall has a route tree that I think can lend itself to being used in different looks, whereas I think Roman Wilson is going to continue to fit in the same spot that he was in the Michigan offense, which is, you know, really effective in the slot. And I get it. There's a lot to like about him. 4.39 speed means that he can be shifty and nimble on his feet. However, I think that when you look at the tape, there was a lot there that I think at the next level probably wouldn't have been there for a Roman Wilson in his tape. And that's why I think that given all those things, you know, the catch point, I think, is a little bit of a concern as well. Austin Gale also on our wide receivers episode had a lot to say about Roman Wilson. I highly suggest that you go and look at that one, take a look at that episode as well. But Roman Wilson, I think, is just not the best fit for me.
All right, JT, at this point, we're taking requests. I agree with what you just said. But now Jay Boogie wants thoughts on Xavier Leggett, who we also wrote about in this article and we weren't going to talk about. But you know what? We're men of the people. So just give us a quick 60 seconds on Xavier Leggett, who you wrote the Titans should draft in the second round.
And this is one that I think was in
pound
my
the Homer alarm. Yeah, pound the Homer alarm.
I'm wearing the Gamecocks pullover right now. So Xavier Leggett is one of my favorite players in this draft, not just because I'm a Gamecocks fan. But I think that at the next level, I know this is kind of hypocritical of me just saying the Titans wanted to take someone in the second round. You want them to maybe produce earlier than later. I think that's different for Xavier Leggett for a couple of reasons. One, we've seen already this offseason the Titans, reading just from what Brian Callahan has said, what Nick Holtz has said, it doesn't seem like the vibes are really high on a Treylon Burks right now. And I think they continue to not be very high on what he can be for this team. However, I think if they wanted to reset the clock on the Treylon Burks experiment here and not have the absolute, you know, the weight of the world, the expectations that a Treylon Burks had, they could draft a Xavier Legette, who has a very similar profile, you know, turn back the clock on that rookie deal and give him time behind a DeAndre Hopkins and a Calvin Ridley to really develop into the true X yards after the catch guy that I think he can be. Now, at that round two price point, I think that's really, really rich for a Xavier Legette right now. And certainly at 38, I think, you know, a Ricky Pearsall could bring better results earlier. However, I think that there is an intriguing argument to be made about Xavier Legette.
Okay, so with that, we can move on to the defense for once and for all here, which, again, well done. I agree. I think is a really good at 38. I mean, I could be talked into it, but in a trade down situation, I'm with it. I'm about it. Defensively, let's do. Let me talk about Darius Robinson real quick, the defensive lineman edge player, edge defensive lineman hybrid guy out of Missouri, who I think is not just a really attractive prospect, but a direct style replacement for the Titans should they go in his direction. I think he could be a first round pick, but if he fell to 38, I would probably be pounding the table for them to seriously consider him. He would be the Denico Autry replacement for the Titans should they take him, right? At 6'5", 296, he's got real 0-7 technique versatility up front. Like, I think you can play him anywhere on the line. He's not a speed player, but what he lacks in speed, he makes up for with a really impressive play strength, really impressive power profile. He's consistently out muscling defensive or offensive linemen across the defensive line from multiple positions on his college tape. He was supposed to come out in the draft last year as like a priority day three guy, and then went back to I think he took his COVID year at Missouri, went back, had a really impressive season. So he's a late bloomer a little bit. But it didn't really bother me. What I saw on tape looked like, I don't think it was much of a mirage there. He had an eye-watering 27 hurries and 9 sacks last season on 290 pass rush snaps. He needs to move to his like pass rush move set Rolodex. He needs to have some more tricks in his bag. But if he can be coached up in that regard at the next level and become a more efficient runner, he's going to be nasty and a very versatile option, which is super valuable to a team, especially on the defensive front. When you lose a guy inside, you move him inside. When you lose a guy outside, you move him outside. He's your handyman-y fix-it man whenever you need him up there. The way that, again, the Titans used Denico Autry for all those years he was here, and there were many times they'd lose a star on the defensive front, and you wouldn't really notice it all that much because he was an eraser in that way. He kind of filled the need when they called his number. So I think he's got day one rotational ability, and he's got real starter upside. I like Darius Robinson a lot. Speaking of defensive linemen, JT, give me some thoughts on Braden Fisk, who out of Florida State, another guy up front who you see as a guy the Titans maybe shouldn't consider in round two.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think we need to take that one to the bank. We need to laminate that and put it in the book of comps. Darius Robinson is handy mandy. I that's perfect. I love it. I think that one is signed.
Good, that's a good comp. Write it. I wonder how many of our listeners know who Handy Manny is. That was kind of like it was like not quite our childhood, or was it?
I guess it was. Maybe the end of it.
The end of our childhood, I think. I think we were a little bit older.
Either way.
Yeah. Anyways, great Disney show. You should binge all the seasons on Disney Plus. I'm sure they're there.
Taking a Darius Robinson at 38, I think is really good value for what you're getting. I think Braden Fisk is a really nice player. I think he has a lot to like about his game, but at 38, it's just too rich for me. What you like about him and why I think he's going to go high here is just the athleticism that he has.
Freak.
6'3", 292 pounds, runs a 4.78, 33 vert, 117 broad, all well within the 90th percentile at his position. However, you know, being an athletic freak on tape only gets you so far, right? I think you can look at some of his production on the interior of the line last year and see really the story of who he is as a player right now. 6 sacks and 19 hurries show just that, you know, he can get to the quarterback, but he, you know, or he can create that pressure, but he fails to get the job done at the finishing point. And I think that's a big thing for me.
He's another one of those guys. It's like he's supposed to hit good, so why don't he hit good?
Exactly. Also, considering that he is maybe one of the oldest, if not the oldest, defensive interior prospects right now. 24, I think, mid-season or late into next season, he'll already be 25 in his rookie season. Certainly has some tread on the tires already. And like you said, at 38, I think there's probably going to be some more intriguing prospects who, have the production to back up their tape more than a Braden Fisk has.
So where is the number where you're comfortable with the Braden Fisk? Cause like, I think we both see him as a guy we like.
A trade back into the,
like in the 50s,
early 50s, I think is where I would be comfortable, because then you're getting that third round pick where you can also take another guy. And then you have, because really, every pick that they make or every trade back, I think, tells a little bit more of the story, right? If they take a trade back in the second round and take a Braden Fisk and pick up a third, that shows me that, yes, we know that we aren't where we want to be fully competitive, but we'll take the guys who have really nice traits that we think we can develop into really good guys to have this Tennessee Titans renaissance of a defense in 2025, right? Versus taking a Darius Robinson shows a little bit more at 38 that they're ready to go now, that this defense is where it needs to be. And adding a guy like that only just shores up that defensive line, and we feel really good about it.
Agreed. Going back to if they stick at 38, which we both hope they trade down, but it's, it's hard to trade. So if they stick at 38, a guy that I think is increasingly a very, very real possibility for them is Junior Colson, linebacker out of Michigan. I don't say that as a bad thing, because you wrote about why the Titans should draft him in the second round. I think both of us would be comfortable with him at 38. What'd you write about him?
Junior Colson, since our linebacker episode, as I've watched more and more Michigan players, he continues to pop more and more on tape, man.
Right.
This guy, who is a Brentwood native, from the area, the Middle Tennessee area. I don't know did he go to Brentwood? He went Ravenwood?
No, he went to Ravenwood. Brentwood High School's arch rival, the Raptors.
I don't know anything about these.
I lived closer to Ravenwood than I did to Brentwood. I could, from where I'm sitting right now, currently still living, during football season, you go out at night, you can hear the band from here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And my just random anecdote, my best friend, Austin Chaffin, his dad, who's like a second father to me, because like very close family friends, grown up together, Eddie Chaffin, he was our ball coach all through, when we would do peewee football, YMCA basketball, all these things. He was the ball coach, right? And I texted him about this the other day. Did you ever run into Junior Colson? And he was like, I coached Junior Colson. He was on my Brentwood Blaze fifth grade team with his younger son, Elliot. They played together. And he was telling me about it because they moved from, is it Haiti or Jamaica?
Yeah, Haiti.
Haiti. Moved from Haiti when he was 9 years old to America. And football was the way that he became engrossed in American culture, American life, and how big part of how he learned the language. And Eddie was telling me about how he used to have to tell the rest of the team to play when they were installing stuff, and then go to Junior and draw it out on a clipboard. You're this circle right here. Here's where you go. Here's what you do. Cause he couldn't speak very good English, which is crazy. And I'm like, Eddie, I don't know if you know this. He's very good. He's going to be a top 50 pick in this draft, and he might be a Tennessee Titan. So could be.
There's a lot to really like about him. If the Titans want to have a guy as a rookie wear the green dot on that linebacking group, Junior Colson is one of the best guys to do it. Elite quickness in the coverage game, an 83.4 PFF coverage grade, over 128 tackles from his 2022 and 2023 season. This is a kid that ended up going to Michigan and starting from day one. He's got a very, really, really smart football IQ, checks a lot of boxes that I continue to see on tape with his quickness. He pops and is one of those guys who can get downfield in the blitzing scenarios as well. Junior Colson is one of those guys that doesn't have the injury concerns of a Peyton Wilson that I'm so high on, and is why I'm now firmly confident with taking him at the 38th pick, because I think he does have the potential to be the number one linebacker in this class.
Well, another thing is the allure of a guy like Peyton Wilson is, holy, look at him cover. He's an incredible coverage linebacker. You trust him like a cornerback back there. He can play on actual receivers and hang. Junior Colson is hard to talk about in that way, because it's not like there's an element of his game where you're like, holy crap, Junior Colson is a killer at this. But what does he do poorly? I can't point to that thing. And I was listening to the Athletic football show. Super high floor. I was listening to the Athletic football show earlier today. And I tweeted this out, Dane Brugler talking about this linebacker class. And here's what he had, very strong words on Junior Colson. And it was one of those moments where I stopped what I was doing. I was like, oh, this kind of shifts my perspective on where he's going to go and how he may very well be a Tennessee Titan. He said, quote, we're talking those sneaky guys who might go earlier than we think, maybe sneak into round one. It's not impossible. He is, I think, the clear linebacker one in a weak linebacker class. And so if you want to come away from this draft with a standout guy in the middle, a green dot guy, Junior Colson is, I think, easily the top guy. And I question whether or not he's going to get past 37 with Harbaugh and the Chargers, who obviously coached him in college. So, like, if his floor is 37, 38, in terms of the Titans, but like from a national analyst who's as plugged in as anybody and has a good idea of where these guys are going to go, if he's there for the Titans at 38, I'm going to kind of be surprised if on Friday night you and I are sitting together watching this, Junior Colson's on the board. I'm going to be talking, okay, this pick is Junior Colson. I'm pretty certain this pick is Junior Colson.
It seems like more and more he fits the perfect spot where the Titans may need the most on the defensive side of the ball, right? They are lacking that guy. And if they can, at 28 there, or 38, be there and fill that need immediately, the Titans should run up that card.
Agreed. Okay, that's round two. Let's move on to round three here. And again, if you're with us live today on Sunday evening, thanks for being here. We're happy that you're hanging out. We'd love to hear your thoughts on any of these guys. We're taking requests. If you have a guy you like to hear about, we may or may not have written about, we'll talk about him. And if you have thoughts on these guys, we are going through the 2024 and Titans edition of the Do and Don't Draft Guide. By the way, JT throwing it up here, no better time than now to advertise our live show. Hello, Draft Live on Thursday and Friday night. It'll be JT and I together in person, sipping on something cold and delicious, watching the draft along with you guys, talking through it in real time, giving real time analysis and reacting to everything the Titans do. We've done it for 2 years in a row. This will be the third. We've had an incredible time the first 2 years. We're planning on making this year's even bigger and better. So check it out. Wherever you're finding this show right now, it's going to be there live on YouTube, live on Twitter, live on Facebook, all things 440 and Broadway Sports Media. So check it out. Hang out with us. We look forward to seeing you there. Okay. Round three here. Let's and Kenneth with a question here for round four. Kenneth, we're going to star that. We'll get to there when we get to round four here in just a minute. So we appreciate the question. Round three. There's one skill position player I want you to talk about, who we've not talked much about at all since the Senior Bowl, where we saw him in January. And that's Devontae Walker. Tez Walker out of UNC. The guy that was catching passes from a Drake May and not making him look all that great out there, because we don't think the Titans should draft Devontae Walker in round three, or probably I'll speak for myself. I wouldn't want him in round four. I don't think he's a very good receiver. I don't think he's going to be good in the NFL. JT, talk us through why that is.
This is a guy who was, before the Senior Bowl, on the consensus big board at 33. He has now fallen to the consensus 81 on the big board here. Tez Walker, man, this may also be just a argument for Drake May to be even better on a lot of people's big boards than he already is. Because if you're Drake May's number one target and you're putting up a 54.8 PFF grade against man coverage, That's a big red flag for me. And that's something that we definitely saw at the Senior Bowl. This is a guy who was always just fighting the ball through coverage and just when he was wide open. This is a guy who just really couldn't catch the ball for whatever reason. He had a really tough Senior Bowl, and that has continued to kind of snowball him through the process before the draft here. There's some things to like about him. A 4.36 40 shows that he does have the speed to be good at the next level, but 6.1 193 shows that small frame and why you really have to be good at catching the ball at the next level at that size. And Tez Walker does not know how to catch the football. And I think that's a big reason why at the next level, he will struggle, and why he's out of my top 10, probably even my top 15 wide receivers right now. In this draft class.
Yeah, that's fair. And if you're watching with us live, I just disappeared for like most of that. JT, well done vamping. I have a pregnant wife. I heard a crash downstairs. I want to make sure everybody was alive and fine. We're just dropping things. It's fine. Okay. So that's Tez Walker out of UNC. Let's talk about some guys on the offensive line and two guys that are more interior lineman options. But I don't think with how big a need the Titans have at tackle and how strong this tackle class is, I think folks are like, yeah, Titans are going to be tackle focused. And I agree. But I'm not going to write off the possibility of them going and getting an interior lineman. You know, they have guys that can play right guard, but they could certainly upgrade there. Like, it wouldn't be all that difficult to find an upgrade at right guard. And I think that depth is also a big thing that they are going to be looking to address, especially on day three. So, you know, this is these are round three guys, and all of these guys we're talking about are potential, you know, hypothetical trade back options, like, because the Titans don't have a third round pick still. So we're talking about them if the Titans were to trade back, which we think they're interested in doing. And so let's start with Dominic Pooney, JT, who you first spoke to at the combine. You were at his podium, and he has a connection to one of the newer members of the Titans coaching staff in Scott Fuchs, who is the assistant offensive line coach. He played a lot of different things in college. He was playing tackle most recently. He's projected to be an interior lineman, but talk about why you think the Titans should consider drafting him in the third round and why his connection to the Titans make him a unique player that's on their board.
Well, first of all, at the combine, Pooney talked to how Fuchs was maybe the biggest impact in him getting better every single year while he was at Kansas. And he kind of topped off 2023 with his best season, allowing zero sacks and only 15 hurries in over the last two seasons at Kansas. He did struggle on the outside on that right side. I think he played left and right. I mean, this is a guy that, right, he's the most versatile maybe lineman in this class. There have been guys at the combine some teams at the combine who wanted him to even try out at center because this guy can play anywhere on the line.
Okay, so he's played a little bit of everything, but last year he was primarily a left tackle, and the year before he was primarily a left guard.
So this guy, you know, some of the tougher competition he's really struggled with, and when I think on that outside, why I think he's going to move into the interior. But this is a guy that I think no matter where you put him on the offensive line, he's so refined in his game that, you know, he has the basics to be a starting caliber guy. The problem is just, you know, the arm length is why I think he also is moving inside. You know, some longer edge defenders were really getting the best of him. But I think with that connection and decent size, 6'5 and 313 pounds, he's light on his feet. And I think he really, if the Titans found themselves with a third round pick, could look at a guy like Pooney who has the connection already and has a rapport with the offensive line, you know, the coaching staff here, that could be a really nice plug and play guy if they needed him to be.
Fair. And the one guy I wanted to mention that I wrote a don't draft column on was Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State. He's a guard who in college showed he had some tackle versatility. At the next level, he's going to be an interior player. And the reason I wanted to mention him is because there's some things about his profile that I think on the surface, Titans fans look at and be like, okay, you know, maybe, because I think he's a good lineman and, you know, he's got the right build for it. He's got elite broad and 40-yard dash times and measurements. You know, he's twitched up. He's athletic. The biggest thing is that he is a sort of stiff player. He's not the best mover in the short area. And, that's part of the reason why I don't see him as a guy that could play right guard. I think he's a left guard only, and the Titans have one of those already in Peter Skoronski. So that's the ultimate reason why I don't think he would be a good candidate if the Titans were considering an interior line option in round three. So that's Cooper Beebe out of Kansas State. Just wanted to mention him real quick. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball. A big fella on the opposite side in the trenches up front in the middle is Ruk Ohorohoro, who is one of our favorite players. We've talked a lot about him in the last 7 days on this show, but we wanted to show him a little bit more love, JT, because you wrote about him in the third round being a player the Titans should absolutely consider.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in on the consensus big board as the 69th overall prospect. But I think the biggest thing with his game is that he plays on the interior like a guy with the bendiness and the twitch of an edge defender. And that's something that you can really see in his game, right? He played at least 30 snaps lining up from anywhere at nose to the outside of the tackles last season for Clemson. If the Titans wanted to maybe look to find a trade back position and get a pick in the third round and want to take a guy like Ohorohoro and really have a guy who can play anywhere on the defensive side of the line and do it all, he is a guy that, kind of like Darius Robinson, has that versatility and could be a good fit for the Titans.
I agree. He's just, when you watch him on tape, he sucks you in. And that's the biggest thing for me, is that he has the look of an NFL player up front in the middle. And I think he's going, I'll be shocked if he's gone or not gone by the end of day two. It would not shock me if he snuck into the second round somehow. So that's Rook Ohorohoro out of Clemson. Let's do some linebackers here. Let me mention real quick Jeremiah Trotter Jr. out of his Clemson teammate here, who I think is a talented linebacker, but I don't think he'd be a good fit for the Titans. So I wrote about why the Titans should not draft him. He's a strong athlete. He's a downhill, heat-seeking missile style linebacker who is effective in that downhill role. But that is just like the common theme here is the Titans don't need that guy, right? He's not going to be your go-to deeper coverage, reliable guy. He's not going to be your green dot guy at the next level, I don't think. And his skill set would be pretty redundant with a Kenneth Murray, who they just brought into the fold. So I don't think a Jeremiah Trotter out of Clemson would be a good option. But we do think that Cedric Gray out of UNC, just a couple of miles down the road there, is a good option for the Titans. And you wrote about why the Titans should consider drafting him.
I think the biggest thing for the Titans this offseason has been bringing in guys who love making plays, absolute playmakers, and Cedric Gray is no exception. I think he has a ways to go in his coverage game, but he's a sound tackler, had 115 tackles in 2022, followed that up with 80 tackles this past season in 2023. But the biggest thing is that he forced 11 turnovers, including an interception and 5 sacks in 2023. This is a guy who, wherever you look on the field, Cedric Gray is going to try to be there making a play. And if the Titans found themselves in the back half of the third, even with their pick in the fourth, who I think Cedric Gray could still be there, he would be a guy that I think you could put into the rotation with the Kenneth Murray and the other linebackers in this group. And really find some times next season where he's out there making an impact.
I agree. He's one of the last stops. It's him and a guy we're going to talk about here in the fourth round in Jordan McGee. Spoiler. Those are kind of the last guys on the linebacker big board where I consider them to be viable, actual potential starter options at the green dot linebacker position, the coverage linebacker position. Before we dive into touching on a handful of guys from rounds 4, 5, 6, and 7, all of our day three guys we wrote about, who we'll touch on a bunch of them for you guys. Let's address some of these questions in the comments, which we appreciate. And if you guys have more and you're listening with us live on a Sunday, throw us some more. We'd love to hear them. And this week is all about addressing as much draft talk as humanly possible. We'll be here as long as you guys want us to be here fielding questions. Kenneth asking a good one. What is the best fourth round receiver to both of you? And he posited, is it Javon Baker out of UCF, who we did write about? I think we were planning on talking about him. No, we weren't going to talk about him, but he is in the article. So if you want to read up on him, he is in there. And I think he is a due draft candidate for the Titans. I don't know, man. Look, I'm looking at the big board here, the consensus big board, that is, at guys in the fourth round. So guys in the, like, you know, the 100s range. And it's, you know, it's Javon Baker, it's Malik Washington, Brendan Rice, Johnny Wilson. In terms of talent, if Jermaine Burton falls into day three, it's Jermaine Burton out of Alabama. But that becomes such an interesting conversation, right? Because he is a guy that, like, if he had no off the field issues, he'd probably be a top five, top six wide receiver in this class. He may be a first round talent. He's certainly a second round talent, in my opinion. But he might fall into day three because there are going to be a handful of teams that have black dots on him on their board. He's going to be X'd out. He's going to be a cannot draft guy. You and I behind the scenes have talked about this idea the past couple of days, like, where would you consider drafting a Jermaine Burton? And if he's there for you in the fourth round, I'm closing my eyes and scooping him up. I don't care. I can't pass on that talent.
So off the field attitude issues are different for you than a guy who has been re-medically cleared to come back to football in a guy like Laiatu Latu.
That is not true. Okay. So no, well, no,
it's kind of the same scenario.
No,
right?
Because you never asked me if I'd draft Laiatu Latu in the fourth round. If he fell to the fourth round. Then I would draft Laiatu Latu. Yes. But if he fell to 38, I probably wouldn't draft Laiatu Latu personally, just because
I think it's the same.
He had to retire. He could listen. Here's the thing. You can fix a personality issue. You can't make a guy's back not be broken. Like that's different. It's different.
I guess so. But at the same time, for a guy who, which I agree, has the upside to be a second round caliber wide receiver, for teams to pass on him three full times, I think him still be there in the fourth, it gives me a little bit that of nobody showed up to his birthday party vibes. And that's that's just something I don't know if I can get on board with.
You wouldn't burn a fourth round pick on a guy that objectively has on field first round traits.
No, I probably would. I would.
Okay. So get off your high horse.
My wide receiver that I do really like, you kind of mentioned him, Malik Washington, I think would, if he is still there.
Yep.
I know the guys over at a football show and football other in other F words have really talked highly about him. I have a lot of the same things.
He's an
to
article.
Say.
I wrote him.
Malik Washington is a guy that I think if he were there in the fourth would be a really great value pick for the Titans.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the answer to that question. Moving on here to Kevin Davis's question. He said, I'm a Penn State homer. Thoughts on Chop Robinson. And if you think he could fall to 38, funny you ask, because Chop Robinson ended up on the cutting room floor, no pun intended there, of this article. I almost wrote a do not draft Chop Robinson in the second round. And here's why. Talented player, Kevin. And I'm not going to dispute that. From a physical profile standpoint, he's probably the most impressive of the top four edge rushers in this class, just from a trait standpoint. His first step is wicked fast, better than anybody else's in this class. I just don't. Once again, he's one of those guys. If he's supposed to hit so good, why didn't he hit good? He didn't. The production in college was not at the same level as what you'd expect from a guy that's that talented. So it's a two-way street where sometimes those guys come to the NFL, get the right coaching staff, and they explode. And sometimes those guys come to the NFL and coaching staffs realize there's a reason why this guy, he just can't play ball for whatever reason. He just can't do it despite being such an incredible athlete. And I don't know, man, that's a risky thing for me for a team when you need a starting caliber edge rusher. And Chop Robinson has the potential to be one of the best in the NFL, but he also has the potential to flame out and never be anything. And that concerns me a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on there. With him, once again, he's kind of like in the same mold of a Trayvon Walker or a Tyree Wilson, who has the athletic traits, but just never was able to put up the production. We've seen the last two or three years how that's worked out. Now, Chop Robinson is not on the same extreme caliber of a Trayvon Walker or a Tyree Wilson, but it does have a little bit of shades of it.
He's also not a top 10 pick like those guys were.
Exactly.
You know,
maybe third time's the charm though, in the same scenario.
Well, and here's the thing, you bring up those examples. Those guys aren't necessarily bad at football. Like they both may be rounding into form. Like there's a reality in which Chop Robinson is as good as he possibly can be, but it's not until 2027, right? It could take till the back half of his rookie contract. And then you realize it by then it's like, the Titans need guys now. They need dudes that are impact players now. That's like a pick that he may end up going to like a Chiefs or a 49ers at 31, 32. And I'm going to love that pick because I'm going to be like, you know, embarrassment of riches. These teams have the ability to wait and develop. And in two or three years, we're going to be like, I can't believe we let this guy go to this team because they can afford to sit and do that. The Titans don't benefit by grabbing a guy that they have to sit around and wait on. Okay. Zedian asking, do we think Javon Baker will fall into the fourth round? We wrote about him in the fourth round of our.
I think it's a 50-50 for me personally.
Yeah, like he, you know, honestly, what he gives me, and it could just be that the colors from college are similar. But like last year, I think back to A.T. Perry out of Wake, who I think we wrote in this article from last year, A.T. Perry, fourth round, due draft. And then he fell to what, the late sixth, early seventh round, went to the Saints. It ended up being an incredible legend of a pick. So like, well done. He's not done much yet, but he will. Don't worry.
The analytics say that he's a dog. So that's all I care about.
Exactly. And Javon is a better prospect than AT. Don't get me wrong. The reason why I brought him up is because we just sat and watched him fall and fall and fall and didn't know why. And there's always one of those guys. It wouldn't shock me if that's Javon Baker, just because like, we've heard so much about him from the draft community, as we did with A.T. Perry last year. Like, he was a hipster pick. Like, this Javon Baker, man, is going to be a value day three guy. And he may end up going second round and, like, making that justified. But when you hear none of it from the NFL, you're like, okay, maybe they just don't. Maybe there's something about him that's just not it, and he'll fall farther than we think. So I'd give it 50-50, too.
Yeah, and then Walter here also saying, I'm looking at Ben Sinnott, your boy.
My boy.
A 3rd or 4th round grab. Guy's got something about him, in my opinion. I love Chig, but getting another problem at tight end would be nice.
Listen here, Walter. Lean in real close. I would love Ben Sinnott in round 3 or 4, but he ain't going to be there, big dog. I think Ben Sinnott might be the second tight end off this board, which may be the top of the 3rd round. Like, I think the run on tight ends, the run on running backs, the run on linebackers, that's going to be late round 2, early round 3 is when that starts. So, like, could he be there in the 3rd if the Titans traded back and had, like, the 87th pick or something? Maybe a Ben Sinnott's there. Maybe. But I think the NFL likes this guy a lot. I think some teams are going to have him as their tight end 1 or 2. Walter says, shh, I'm trying to speak it into existence. If you could get him on day 3, if he is there on day 4, I'm going to come into our Saturday show, pre-show, yeah, saying Titans 4th round pick, Ben Sinnott, draft for value. I don't care if it's tight end, run the card in. I just don't think it's going to happen, but I'm with you that if he's there,
draft him.
Pretty nice. Okay. Let's move on to some of these 4th round guys, 5th round guys, 6th, 7th round guys. And we'll just touch on some guys here. Well, not as full-throated a breakdown, because we are already an hour 10 into this episode. But you know what? It's draft week.
It's our magnum. It's our magnum opus. Like,
it is. You know? It's exactly. It deserves. It deserves a 90-minute episode. So that's what we're gonna do.
Like, we came into this saying we're gonna talk about like 35, 36 guys. Well, guess what? Go read the article tomorrow, because there's another 30-ish, 35 guys in that.
This article could be 3 hours if we wanted it to. It really this episode could. We could read it verbatim to you, exactly, and make you want to die, but we're not doing that because you wouldn't listen. Okay, let's start with Isaac Grendo, who we've talked a little bit about on the show. Louisville running back. You heard about why the Titans should draft him. I think the Titans are considering a running back option on day 3. 2 of their 17, something like that, confirmed 30 visits so far have been running backs in and around this range. So tell me about Isaac Grendo and why he'd be a good fit for the Titans.
I mean, just athletic, built in a lab specimen right here. 9.98 RAS score at 221 pounds, runs a 4.33 40, which means that if this guy gets up to his top speed, it's really hard to take him.
You're
down.
Not catching him. Nope.
I think he's a great fit, because I think the big knock on him right now is that he never was the featured back at Louisville. You know, never had more than 17 carries in his career.
It was Wisconsin before Louisville, where he did literally nothing, and then he went to Louisville and then sort of did something. So, like, yeah, the production is interesting.
But I mean, with his touches, he posted last year in 2023 a efficient 6.1 yards per carry, and he caught 22 of his 24 targets. So if the Titans wanted to round out their room with Tony Pollard, Tyjae Spears, and Isaac Grendo, not to mention that he is a pretty efficient pass blocker, I think that is a really nice room to have.
It'd be so sexy. And another thing with him is, you mentioned that speed, you mentioned the burst that he has, the explosiveness. I think that he's going to be drafted in part for his return ability. I think he's an ideal kickoff returner for me, at least in my head, with this new kickoff rule.
With the new rule, yeah.
100%. He's the kind of guy I want back there, and I think he could have a lot of value for a team.
Same in that role. You could do that with Xavier Leggett, but I don't know if you're spending a 2nd round 38th pick on Xavier Leggett to be your kick returner. Maybe you are.
You show up to the podium that night like, well, the main reason we drafted him was we love his return ability. Let me talk about Brendan Rice, who was brought up earlier in the episode. I'm sorry to double rain on whoever that was, his parade.
Josh.
I don't like Brendan. Yes, Josh, I'm very sorry. Brendan Rice, I'm not in. Everybody knows, is what I wrote here. Everybody knows Marvin Harrison's son's in this draft class, but he's not the only son of a legend in this draft class at the receiver position. The big difference, however, is that Brendan Rice isn't nearly the receiver prospect that his father Jerry was. I went and looked this up. It was a little bit before our time, JT. You want to guess where Jerry Rice was drafted? What position?
What
overall?
Position?
What number overall?
Okay, I was like, he's going to wide receiver.
He was a wide receiver. Yep, good guess.
Was he 3rd round? 3rd round?
17th overall. I thought he was going to be like a day 2 guy, but he was as billed and then some in the NFL. So that was Jerry. Brendan, his son, is going to be a day 3 guy. He's got the prototypical outside receiver size you're looking for. He's got decent speed, strong bag of techniques. His route tree is nice, but he's got really bad separation ability. And when you compare, when you pair that with him not leveraging that big body often to take advantage of it, to make up for it, he doesn't do that. And so you can't both not separate and not win physical battles, because you're going to be in physical battles because you can't separate. So, you know, he consistently gets beat physically by corners that are smaller than him on tape, He's not a very strong 50-50 ball winner. So like the raw traits are there for him to be a serviceable, you know, number two outside receiver, backup, rotational X or Y receiver one day. But he's a serious project right now, and I don't think the Titans should take a swing on him. So that's Brendan Rice. That's one guy that I don't like at the receiver position. Let me just go ahead and get the guy that I do like at the receiver position out of the way here in the fourth round, and that's Johnny Wilson. Here's what I wrote at the beginning of this one. Let Johnny Wilson play receiver, and let's just see what happens. That's where I'm at this point. I think Johnny Wilson, who, you know, the big talk with him this cycle has been, holy cow, have you seen how big this guy is? 6'6", 231, 35.5-inch arms. All of his size and length measurements are 97th percentile and above for a receiver. He's built more like a tight end than a receiver, right? And so you're like, well, at the NFL level, maybe he plays tight end. I want to let him play receiver. Like, I saw, was it the fantasy? I think it was Fantasy Points. There was a chart the other day comparing his size to, like, a Mike Evans, comparing his size to a, was it also Julio
Jones? Darren Waller.
Darren Waller. Okay, yeah. So, like, a tight end who is a receiver type and a receiver who is a tight end type. Like, that tweener size. He could technically be either, I think, on paper, but you're going to utilize him in that similar way because he moves like a guy that's 30 pounds lighter than him. His ability to move in space, the hulking frame, it doesn't really hinder his ability to get in and out of breaks, change direction really well. He's got good balance for his size. All of these things are still there. The biggest knock for me is that, like, the drops were a concern with that. He's got the biggest catch radius of any guy on the field, wherever he's playing any day. Like, it's him, he's the guy, he should be the easiest target, but he doesn't have the most secure hands, so he's going to get on the jugs machine at the NFL level and try to fix that. And if he can improve the reliability of his hands, I think he's worth betting on. If he's there in round four in particular, which he may be a day two guy, if he's there in the fourth round, love a Johnny Wilson, really do.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think because he is one, it's like, it's so slim, though, as well, between him and Mike Evans. It's like, we're talking about this guy as a tight end, despite him just being...
I don't think he's going to be Mike Evans, to be clear. I'm just saying, no, like, a guy that big can do the receiver thing if they can move well.
Exactly. He's an inch taller and, I think, 6 pounds heavier than
Mike
nothing.
Evans. Which, yeah,
is not nothing, but it's like, it's not like we're talking about this guy being 25 pounds heavier than, like, some of these
right.
big boy receivers, right? And no, I'm with you on that one. Moving on to kind of the interior of round four, with the interior defensive line and then also the offensive line, a guy that I think is, if the Titans were looking to add depth at the offensive line position at in day three, a guy that I just simply don't think is worth it is Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. I'm just going to give you a few things about him, right? And tell me
what you don't want to just recreate the entire Notre Dame tackle room.
I don't really know. No.
Not on your to-do list.
No, not on my to-do list. And this is why. 6'5", 310 pounds. He has a nice build. However, five penalties last year in 2023. Because, you know, when he initially loses, he really loves to get handsy. Does that sound like anybody on the Titans offensive line right now?
Strong build, decent footwork, but getting beat and having to compensate for it is what you're saying.
Correct.
On the Titans roster currently?
Yes.
At tackle?
Yes.
Like NPF?
Correct. This is a guy who I think is the biggest comp to him could be an NPF. Why add another NPF when you already are trying to develop one is my main takeaway with Blake Fisher.
Well, so
I think there definitely are better options, even in the later rounds, I think.
Fair enough. Is that a comp you came up with, or did you read that somewhere?
I've read it two or three times, and before I even read a couple things on him, just watching him on the offensive line with Joe Alt, I was like, this guy is nowhere near where Joe Alt.
Well, yeah, that part. Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. Okay. That's Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame. Don't draft him in round four. How about a guy you do want to draft on the other side of the trench there in the defensive front, Gabriel Murphy, who we had a confusing episode on Saturday, I think, where you were like, hang on a second. I think, like, there are two guys on UCLA named Murphy. They both play edge and they have identical measurables and they're also the same age. And I was like, wow, they're identical twins. And then you look it up and they are it. We file it under things we should have known already. I don't know how we didn't know this in the draft cycle. There are two Murphys, Gabriel and Grayson, I think. Yeah. Grayson Murphy, very similar prospects, because genetically they're identical human beings. They are identical twins. And Gabriel is the one you like a little bit better than the other one, but
I do.
Here's the thing. If you're a team that got one of them, or like if you're in the division with a team that got one of them, do you want to go draft the other one? So you can just say like, we got the same guy as you. We just got him later. We got a better value on him.
Maybe
like if the Colts draft a Grayson Murphy or a Gabriel Murphy in the fourth round, should the Titans five picks later be like, we got Grayson. He's the same guy. And we got a better value on him. So eat that.
No, because I think that
you think Gabriel's better.
With a bullet. I think the biggest thing for them though is that when you're bringing up that card, when whoever takes the first one, you better make sure you know which one you're talking about and not end up like me. Gabriel Murphy is one of those guys who played alongside Laiatu Latu, and you have to wonder, man, is he, you know, just kind of cleaning up because of what Latu was able to do? Well, no, I think that. In his tape, he was playing in the bowl game without Latu and still was able to have a very productive day. Has a 14.8% pass rush win rate in 2023 with 8 sacks and 23 hurries. You know, I think he has really nice speed to play at the next level, but just, you know, kind of lacks a move arsenal that really could make him a every down starter. But putting him on that line with a Sebastian Joseph Day and a Jeffrey Simmons, I think he could really develop.
Do you think, I agree. I'm still being childish about this. Do you think that they are going to be in the same room on draft night? Like at the same, like you think at the same, because
you would have probably right.
They're like, brothers. They're going to be at their family home. They're like on the consensus board. They're like 14 picks apart. Right. So they could go right on top of each other.
They probably could.
That's awkward for the person that doesn't get the call first, where you got to sit there and be like twiddling your thumbs. And then 30 minutes later, they're going to cut back to you. I hope they have a camera in that household because that'd be interesting.
I hope so too. That would be
okay. Anyways, more guys here. I wrote about Mekhi Wingo out of LSU, a defensive lineman that I think the Titans should draft in the fourth round. The only reason he's not regarded more highly in this class is he's kind of stubby. He's got a length issue, both short legs and short arms. He's 6 foot, 284. His game is pure speed. It's pure quickness in particular. He won regularly with this quickness in college. He had 32 hurries and 9 sacks in the past 2 years at LSU. Rarely came off the field. So he's got a really high and efficient motor, averaging 55 snaps a game in the last 2 years. Is his build going to limit him up front in terms of like what position you can line him against, what guys you can line him up against? Yes, it is. But I think he can fill an extremely valuable niche as a three tech up front for a team. And feast on some loafing offensive linemen that can't handle the speed. So that's Mekhi Wingo, who I think would be a really nice depth rotational defensive line add in round 4. Let's see who else here. Jarvis Brownlee Jr. we've talked about on this show since January, because we talked about how much we loved him at the Senior Bowl, but he's a cornerback in this class that you really liked. And you wrote about why the Titans should draft him if he's there in the fourth round.
Yeah, and I think that he's down here because of his size limitations that he has at the next level. 5'10", 194 will project to mostly be
a slot guy.
In the slot, because when he was going up against some of those bigger guys on the outside, did have an issue with drawing penalties. But he has 4.51 speed, and I think that the best way to describe how he plays is with ferocity, and his attitude is that perfect dog mentality that a corner should have. I think putting him in a room in the fourth round with a guy who, just like L'Jarius Sneed and Chidobe Awuzie, tries to derail wide receivers' routes at the line of scrimmage, putting him in that room could unlock just absolute limitless potential in a guy like Jarvis Brownlee Jr. And why I think he's worth the look to kind of round out that super aggressive and feisty secondary room for Denard Wilson.
Absolutely. And another guy on the defensive side of the ball that I like for a lot of the same reasons, his tenacity, his attitude, Jordan McGee, linebacker out of Temple. He is the last stop on the linebacker train. This is a bad way of saying it. He's the worst linebacker in this class that I will consider. I think that he actually is a guy that has starting potential. He's lacking in size. He makes up for it with really impressive athletic traits, 6'1", 288. He managed a broad jump, 40-yard dash, and 10-yard split, all north of 85th percentile, though, so he's twitched up. The lack of power and length combined with an overall lack of polish are what is going to make him a day 3 prospect. But if he can learn to play more proactively than reactively at the next level, I think he's going to be a real asset for a team. He can hang in coverage and in the run fit. he was reportedly a really emotional player in college, which is, you know, like not nothing. It's an intangible trait you're looking for, especially in your middle linebacker, the quarterback of your defense. 3-year starter at Temple. He was a regular on special teams all the way through his senior year. So he's going to come into the NFL and immediately excel. I think he's going to be a phenomenal special teamer at first. And then, you know, when he can identify and lock onto a target, he's got really impressive closing speed. He shows off that athleticism. I think he'll be a great special teamer at first and then compete for snaps on defense. So I would like a swing on a Jordan McGee if he is there in the fourth round. And then to close out the fourth, that's the last guy we're going to talk about in the fourth round. So again, there are more guys in each of these rounds that we're not talking about on today's show. And you'll have to read the article, which we've not even said. It's going to be out first thing tomorrow on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. I hope you've not been listening to this, like looking for it to follow along. It's not out yet. I'm not done with it. I'm still editing. And I still have two guys I have to write up though I've not gotten to yet. So down to the buzzer here, but it will be ready for you first thing at like 6:30 a.m. tomorrow morning on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. So check it out. Follow JT at JT underscore Runke. Follow at Easton Freeze, Broadway Sports 440, all those things. We'll have it all over social media tomorrow. Fifth, sixth, and seventh round guys. Let's fly through some of these, JT. One skill position player that it may be there in the fifth round for the Titans, who I think they should not consider, is Anaya Smith out of Texas A&M. He's a receiver who, when I first saw him at the Senior Bowl, I was intrigued. I have to admit, like, I found him fascinating because he's got a rare combination of elusiveness and explosive quickness when he's got the ball in his hands. But ultimately, I don't think he's a great fit for the Titans for a couple of reasons. See if any of this starts to sound familiar to you, okay? His height and length are super limiting. They're both sub 10th percentile. He'll be a slot-only player in the NFL. He presents some returner upside, but he's had 6 muffed punts in college. He's also got a decent track record of missing time due to injury, including much of this year's draft process after they found a stress fracture in his shin at the combine. Does anything from that profile stand out to you about a guy that's already on the Titans?
I think the muff punts would probably give it away. I think that had to give it away for Mr. Kyle Phillips.
Yeah, his basic profile is he's just a more twitched up Kyle Phillips. And while I'm not, if you're sitting here and you know ball, you're like, well, they are not similar play style. It's not a perfect comp in terms of play style. But in terms of the role that he would be fitting on a team, they overlap a lot. And like the Titans have Kyle Phillips at home, a guy that is a returner who is great when he got the ball in his hands, but he might not get the ball in his hands because he might drop it. And also he's going to be slot only and he's small and he might not stay on the field all the time because he's hurt. Like, that's Kyle Phillips, man. You've already got that guy sunk cost. Don't spend a draft pick on Anaya Smith because he's going to try to fill that same role. So that's the fifth round skill position guy. You wrote about a offensive line guy that you do like as a potential interior depth add in the fifth round. And that's Delmar Glaze out of Maryland. Tell me about him.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like with him just based on the speed profile and the quickness that he comes with. Of course, if you're taking a tackle here in the fifth, sixth, or seven, I'm going to tell you the same thing. They are very raw prospects in technique, mm-hmm. but there are some that I think project better to the NFL level than others. And I think Delmar Glaze is one of those guys. His biggest pro in his game is the fluid ability to protect. Has a 5'2", 140, which matches that quickness, but the explosiveness and quickness that he has is just something that's hard to find, which I think makes him an intriguing prospect here in the fifth round.
Okay, so that is Delmar Glaze. How about a defensive lineman that I wrote about, Christian Boyd, out of Northern Iowa? As we all, you and I, big you and I fans, everybody knows a lot about you and I. When he showed up at the Shrine Bowl this year in January, he was, I think, determined to make everybody that was there paying attention to leave with the name Boyd written on the top of their to-do list. Because on tape, he looks like a future NFL player. Like, that's the biggest thing. It's similar to Rook in that way. He's not the caliber prospect that a Rook or Horror is, but you can't say that name quickly.
It's getting tough. Yeah,
I know how to say it now, but you have to stop and prepare yourself. Rook or Horror. You can't just fly through it. Yeah, Christian Boyd, I think he's going to be rotational depth on the defensive line at the next level. He's a big body. He flashes serious explosiveness and interior rush ability. He's not just a road bump for the run game that he's going up against. He's got good run defending ability. Had 3 sacks, 9 hits, and 28 hurries last year at Northern Iowa. I think that he'd be a good add in round 5. You wrote about Curtis Jacobs as a linebacking option out of Penn State that you don't like, JT. Why would he be a bad option round 5?
it's the same thing where I think he's a really nice athlete. He's 6'1", 241. The explosiveness is there, but you know, he just did not produce in at Penn State.
Penn State is the weirdest college, man.
They really are.
I feel like they have athletes that come out and you don't know what to do with them. They're crazy strong and they're crazy athletic.
Hit was Micah Parsons. And I think that you could, you know, probably who's the cornerback from the Steelers that they got this year from Penn State. That I just can't think of his name, who was in the draft class last year. The cornerback out of Penn State. Either way,
like the round two pick?
Yes. I don't remember his name.
I'm gonna
either
look
way.
I'll look it up.
Curtis Jacobs, you know, he plays linebacker, but I think would be a really bad fit because he really fits Joey Porter Jr. Thank you so much.
Kevin,
yeah. In the chat there. He plays more of the Kenneth Murray type, you know, really poor in coverage, 80% completion rate, and allowed a passer rating of 99.7 in 2023. You know, only 77 tackles over the last two seasons. They
was Joey. Hang on, was Joey Porter Jr. out of Penn State? Are we sure about that?
I believe
that?
So.
I think it's wrong.
Either way, anyway. Okay. You know, we can figure that out later. I think that given the production that Curtis Jacobs has,
he was at Penn State. Okay, I was dumb. Ignore me.
I don't think it's worth the pick in round five to bet on the traits alone, because certainly they did not show up in college.
That's fair. Okay, I'm done going down my Joey Porter Jr. Rabbit hole. Okay,
there you go.
All right, so that's Curtis Jacobs. Let me round out round five let you round out round five, because you wrote this guy, Malik Mustafa, safety out of Wake Forest, who we've seen a lot of love in the past like 7 days. You know, we talked about him on our safety episode. He's a top 10 safety for me. I'm starting to wonder if I have him too low. Teams seem to really, I mean, the media seem to like him a lot. I've heard things that like teams consider regard him highly. I heard somebody comping him to Buda Baker, which I was like, I don't know about that. But then you look at the way they play in their build and they're like just freaky linebacker builds a little bit. What did you like about Malik Mustafa?
Yeah, certainly he is in this round fifth discussion because, you know, even though he kind of is built like a linebacker, the coverage is not the best there. But I think he's a great fit for the Titans right now because he has been available over the past two seasons with Wake Forest. And, you know, given the kind of makeup of this secondary right now for Jannard Wilson, they truly lack that guy who is going to be shut down in the run defense game at the safety position, you know, kind of lacking what they had with a Kevin Byard. I think that he can come in and replace some of that production. Allowed an 80% completion rate over in 2023, which, you know, is not the best. However, posted an 87.5 run defense grade in 2023, had 21 run stops in 2023 as well. A fluid mover, I think, could really translate well to this Titans defense.
Okay. And if you're watching on video, it's just my headphones broke, but I fixed it. Okay. That's Malik Mustafa falling apart here at the end of this episode. Just
you really are.
I really am. Let's get to round six and seven and get out of here. A couple of guys that are flyer options for the Titans. Let me start with Tip Reiman, who I don't think he's going to fall to the sixth round anymore. I think that the cat's out of the bag on him a little bit, and NFL teams like him a lot because in terms of tight ends on day three, you're looking for the guys that are just like, draft the bigs and fasts and see if it works out. Draft the crazy athletes and see if it works out. And with guys of his size, usually they're kind of oafing, and it's a cautionary tale of, you know, if they're not athletic enough, they're probably not going to hang, even if you want them to be your big body inline tight end, your Y tight end. The difference is he's huge and also really athletic. He's a big fella, 6'5", 271. His physical presence makes him an ideal option for that Y inline tight end role, but he's not just a towering oaf either. He's got a 75th percentile or better shuttle, three cone, broad jump, and 40-yard dash at 270 pounds. So he's a crazy athlete for his size. His game's rough around the edges. That's why he's going to probably go on day three, but man, his traits make him worth taking a shot on. And at that size, to be that athletic, that's exactly the kind of tight end you're looking for on day three. Just say, let's just see what happens. Let's take a flyer and maybe they'll turn into something really awesome.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Tip has been a guy who wasn't on my top 10, but I think I've come around to him that he is flirting with that top 10. A guy that I really do like in round six, who I think is a due draft, is Ethan Driscoll, tackle I believe, where is he out of?
Marshall Thundering Herd, baby.
Thank you. I get that in like SDSU and like the North
Green
Dakota
and small school.
Yeah. Like yeah. All of those like different
animal.
Schools,
yeah.
Are all in my brain. However, the thing about Ethan Driscoll that I think, of course, he goes in the sixth or seventh round because as raw as you can get as a prospect. However, the size is really, really intriguing to me. 6'8 and 313 pounds. That kind of build to play offensive tackle, I think, is something Bill Callahan might want to take a flyer on. You know, might as well see what happens. I think the biggest thing for him and why he is a sixth or seventh round guy is that, you know, at that size, getting down in at pad level to really win is always going to be an uphill battle, but could be an intriguing project.
I agree. Let me go back to the skill position guys here and mention a don't draft in the seventh round, sixth or seventh round. And that's Marcus Rosemead, Jack Saint, wide receiver out of Georgia. I think this guy's bad. Maybe the most indicting thing I can say about him is that there's like, when you cover this draft, actually, when you cover any draft, there's a lot of Georgia tape you have to watch. And usually guys are popping out to you across the board. Even if you're focusing in on, you know, Brock Bowers, you're going to notice something from this lineman. You're going to notice something from this tight end. You're going to notice something from this wide receiver. All the Georgia tape I've watched, I don't think I can't think of a single time Marcus Rosemead Jack Saint has done anything to catch my attention, which is bad. Like, that shouldn't be the case because I've seen a lot of it. And so, you know, he's below average physically and athletically. He's got an impressive arm length. That's about it. You know, when you pair that with very minimal college production at a team where you should have had a lot of offensive production, what are you expecting from this guy at the next level? That's what I'm asking. I don't know. I'm out.
And that translates perfectly to my guy that I'm also out on in round six and seven. Johnny Dixon out of Penn State. We're just talking about a lot of Penn State guys today for some reason.
And why they're bad.
Big thing for him is that he just doesn't have the size at the next level to really compete. 5'10 and 180 pounds. It's going to be an uphill battle for him to really find even a rotational piece. The biggest thing is that he also comes with really short arms, which makes it really, really hard for him to win against bigger bodied receivers. And you can see this in his tape where he had 8 pass interference penalties over the last 2 seasons. Just given that, I think the tape doesn't show enough pop for me to even take a flyer on him in round 6 or 7.
Fair enough. Last guy we're going to talk about here is Kingsley Agwukan, a Stoney Keeley special. I like Kingsley a lot. He's a center out of Florida. This is the kind of hidden gem you're looking for in terms of value proposition in round 6 or 7. And here's why. He presents bargain upside late in the draft. Fought to come back from an ankle injury during the entirety of his 2023 season. Never played it close to 100%. So that means teams are either watching tape where he's not at his best, or they're reliant on his underclassmen tape and senior bowl performance to see what he could be at his best. Projection, a lot of it is. And so he lacks the length or power profile to be drafted higher than day 3, but the unknown of him, I think, is pretty enticing. It's enticing enough to take a swing on him. And those in the know mention his leadership skills as a real plus, something you love to have as a center prospect. The guy's going to be the leader of that offensive line. So that is Kingsley Agwukan. And that is our podcast preview. Can you call half of a thing a preview? Our podcast
primer.
Primer, it's primer, perfect word, primer. Our podcast primer of the 2024 Titans Do and Don't Draft Guide. Again, you're going to want to read the other half of these guys. You know what? We left the better half out. We went through and we decided who are all the worst ones, and we talked about them on the podcast. And if you listen to the end here, you have the half that were the worst and least entertaining. The more entertaining half is still there. You'll have to read them on the Broadway Sports Media's website tomorrow. First thing on Monday morning. If you're listening to this as a podcast version on Monday, then guess what? It's already out. Go read it. It's awesome. It'll be all over our social medias. So check it out. And then of course on Thursday and Friday, mark your calendars. You're already going to be watching the draft. Watch it along with us. JT and I will be live in a studio set up watching the draft, drinking and having a good time with you guys, reacting to analyzing everything live as it happens. We've done this the last 2 years, rousing success. A lot of you guys tuned in and we appreciated that. Join us again. It's much more fun to enjoy the Titans draft as a Titans community. And so let's do that together live all through rounds 1 and then 2 and 3 on Friday night and Thursday night. So check it out wherever you find this show, where you're listening to it right now. It'll be there. So just come back here on Thursday and Friday night. A couple more programming things. We've got two more pods before the actual draft and before those draft live streams. On Monday, we'll be recording live with Sean McAvoy, local QB guru, quarterback coach, private quarterback coach to Will Levis and Malik Willis. He's been working out a lot with those guys this offseason. We're going to talk to him about the top 10 quarterbacks in the 2024 NFL draft, the last of our positional series. We'll get out of the way, as well as some thoughts on what those guys' offseasons have been like and some things, some nuggets from him that you're not going to have heard from anybody else in the Nashville media market until tomorrow. So tune in for that live on Monday, dropping as a podcast on Tuesday. And then live on Tuesday, our final pre-draft episode, Mock Draft 2.0. I'll be going through my mock draft, all of the first round, and a Titans 7-round mock. It's my official prediction for what the Titans will do and what the first round will look like on Thursday night. So that'll be a live episode Tuesday afternoon, coming out as a podcast Wednesday morning. Okay, so a big week ahead. Looking forward to it. JT, I know I'm excited. I know you're excited. We'll be back here tomorrow with Sean. I almost said Sean Kingston, not Sean Kingston. That'd be crazy, though. That'd be awesome.
That'd be crazy.
People would not expect that. No. Sean McAvoy will be here with us tomorrow. Until then, for producer JT, I'm your host, Easton Freeze. This has been the Hot Read Podcast. Read your article tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.